The Morning Program with Gareth Parker, where you don't miss a thing.
Coming up, Pete Sewell, our Rhodes Scholar from Main Roads, the Director of Metropolitan Operations. Obviously, some frustration around the roadworks on the Kwinana Freeway this morning. We'll hear what Pete has to say soon. After 11, our new weekly segment, Let's Talk Business, with Peter Switzer, one of the country's most experienced business commentators, also the founder of the small business website, growyourbusiness.com.au. We will bring you an update on all of the action from the Oscars in Los Angeles as well. Mark Niglassis, our morning's movie reviewer, will join us in the next hour of the program. Don't forget either, we are 6PR. They are the magic words. If we call you, they are the magic words to answer. You could win $100 if you get that right. If you got the code word, it's $2,000 we're up to on the jackpot. That is all ahead of us. I'm joined in the studio by a special guest. She had a difficult childhood for parts of it, born with what at the time, I guess, were undiagnosed learning disabilities. People couldn't quite put a name on them, couldn't put a label on them. But teachers called her stubborn or slow, sometimes even worse. When she tried to read and write, things didn't come out as they should. That was the starting point for an extraordinary journey that culminates in the reason that she's here in Perth this morning and the third edition of her global best-selling book, The Woman Who Changed Her Brain. Barbara Arrowsmith-Young is the woman who changed her brain. Barbara, good morning.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here. Tell me about what it was like growing up as a kid in Canada.
Well, I started school in grade one and overheard my grade one teacher tell my mother that I had a mental block because at that time, this was in the late 1950s, there wasn't even a concept of a learning disability or a learning difficulty. So being quite literal, I actually thought I had a wooden cube in my head that made learning difficult. Later, I learned that I didn't have a piece of wood in my head, but I had blockages in my brain that definitely made certain aspects of learning challenging. And I really feel like in grade one, I was given a life sentence. My teacher told my parents, don't have high expectations for your daughter. She will always struggle in school. And certainly, it was a struggle. And this was the time of what I call the pre-neuroplastic paradigm. So the belief was, if you have a problem in your brain or a problem related to learning, it's a lifelong condition. And the best you can do is compensate, you know, use your strengths to support your weaknesses. And that is possible to an extent, but it takes heroic effort. So I became a workaholic in grade one. I would come home at lunch, do flashcards to learn how to read and write. I'd come home after school, do flashcards. My mother was an educator. My father was a scientist and an inventor. And he kept saying to me that if there's a problem in the world and no solution, it's your responsibility to go out and find a solution. And he said, if the rest of the world says you can't do it, says ignore them. This is how science goes forward. So I feel like in grade one, I was set on a quest to try to find a solution to my learning difficulties.
How at that time did those learning difficulties manifest?
So I struggled with learning how to read and write. I read everything backwards. I wrote backwards. If you gave me two numbers to add, like 12 and 14, I'd add the 4 and then the 1 and then the 2 and then the 1. So there was really no logic. Everything was kind of random in my world, and I struggled with comprehension. And
so is it what we would now call dyslexia? Is that what you had?
It would be probably a combination of dyslexia and auditory processing. So right. The dyslexia in the reading and writing aspect, the auditory processing in the comprehension piece. So, I mean, eventually with my mother's help, I learned how to read and write, but it didn't address the underlying learning difficulty. I struggled all the way through school with comprehension. And I developed an incredible visual photographic memory and an auditory verbatim memory. So I could listen to a conversation and like a little recorder, I'd record it. So when I went to write an exam, I would kind of flip through my notebook in my head or flip through what the professor had said, and I would write the answer down. And sometimes I made a really good match and I got 100%. Sometimes I made a really lousy match because I didn't understand the question and I get 10%.
Wow.
And my teachers would conclude that I hadn't worked hard for that 10%, but I worked equally hard for the 10 as I did for the 100. So there's a lot of misconception with individuals with learning difficulties because sometimes they can do things and then other things they just can't do. And often the assumption is made, well, they're just not trying hard enough because they can do something over here. So why can't they do it over here? And if we understand these different parts of the brain and their job, we can then start to understand why they can do certain things and why they can't do others.
Just want to bring you back to your parents. So your mother was an educator, your father a scientist and inventor. It sounds to me as though they didn't accept the sentence that others were putting out for your life, that they encouraged you to not be limited by it. What a blessing that must have been.
It was an incredible blessing. I don't want to think about what it would be like if they hadn't. I mean, there was just the expectation that, you know, that I would be okay and that I could overcome the difficulties. And certainly it was a struggle. But when I was 25, 26, I received a book. I was handed a book in August of 1977. I remember it very well. That changed my life. And it was Luria's book, The Man with the Shattered World, that told the story of a Russian soldier who had a very localized head wound in a battle in World War II. And this man was keeping a journal and describing all the things he couldn't do after the wound. These were all the things that at age 26, I still couldn't do. So I now knew my problem was my brain. And to solve the problem, you have to first understand the nature of it. And this was the first kind of aha moment. There's something wrong with my brain. And at the same time, I came across Rosenzweig's work coming out of Berkeley, looking at this idea of neuroplasticity, which simply means our brain is capable of change across our lifespan. And I thought, okay, if the brain's capable of change and I can understand the part of my brain that needs to change, maybe I can find an activity or an exercise to stimulate it to change it. And that's what set me on this journey.
You write in the foreword to this latest edition about how we think about the brain as a machine, as a computer, that is, and even the language we use, that it's hardwired in a certain way, which rather suggests that if it's hardwired, you can't do much about retraining it and fixing it.
Absolutely. And really, all the research is suggesting that there are aspects of it that, you know, have some hardwiring, but it's incredibly malleable to change. And we're doing some fascinating research at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, Illinois, in the United States, University of British Columbia in Vancouver and Canada. And we're actually looking into the brains of children with learning difficulties before the intervention, before they go into my program, and after. And what we're seeing in their brains before is they're working really, really hard. So there are areas that are under-functioning. They're not working properly. And then there are these other areas that overcompensate and work really hard. So we're seeing a really inefficient brain working really, really hard, but not providing the results that one would expect, which is exactly what you see when you look at a student with a learning difficulty like me. They work really, really hard, but the results don't kind of, they aren't commensurate with the amount of work. And what we're seeing over time as they go through the program is those underfunctioning areas are strengthened in their connectivity. So they're coming online and doing what they're supposed to do. So those hyperconnected areas can reduce and relax. And so the brain starts to work efficiently, effectively, and do what it's designed to do.
So we'll talk about the program and the method, which sort of bears your name in a moment. But that word neuroplasticity, neuro meaning brain, plastic meaning, I guess, malleable, plastic, we understand that. I reckon it was a term I first heard probably 6-7 years ago, something like that. And it is an emerging field of research, which you have contributed greatly to. But when you're back in the 1970s, the 1980s, and we've got very different ideas about how the brain works, what was it that persuaded you that this was something that could be overcome? It was sort of a quest to try and unlock this secret.
Yeah, well, desperation.
Really?
I didn't see a future for myself. I was now 26 years old. I still couldn't tell time. I struggled to understand concepts, even conversations. I could not be having this conversation with you. I would be terrified if somebody would ask me a question because I'd think, do I really understand what they're saying?
And this is well into your 20s that you're like this.
Well, this was in my 20s. And
wow.
I would be terrified if, you know, I'd meet a professor and just hope that he wouldn't ask me a question because then I would appear not very intelligent. I mean, because I could go away and memorize everything, but I was now in graduate school working 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, sleeping 4 hours a night, and I compromised my immune system. It's like that heroic effort, but still didn't understand. So desperation is what drove me, and I figured I have to try something. I had no idea if it would work, but the research seemed to suggest it was possible, and so I just set to creating exercises. I had three different cognitive areas that weren't working, created three different exercises and saw the change and realized, yes, there is human neuroplasticity.
So this is the sort of the genesis of the system. You actually go out and invent your own exercises, your own games with your own brain almost.
I did.
What
and then,
they?
Well, the first one, believe it or not, was clocks, right? Because not that I wanted to learn how to tell time, which eventually I did, but I wanted to force my brain to process relationships. And a clock is a relationship between the hour hand, the minute hand. And then I kept adding more complexity. And now we actually have a 10-handed clock. So it's like processing 10 relationships simultaneously. And only two people have looked at that clock and understood it. One was an astronomer who discovered radio radio-emitting galaxies, and the other was a physicist from Harvard. So the idea is you start with where the deficit or difficulty is, and you build that function up to at least average, and in some cases we can bring it to a strength, to above average. So you're giving somebody a strength where before they had a difficulty. So that was one area that I worked on, and that's where I started to be able to comprehend. I could follow conversations. Part of being part of human discourse for the first time in my life was profound. I struggled with social relationships because I didn't understand what people were doing, what they were saying. Then I created an exercise. I was very awkward. I didn't know where the left side of my body was in space, so I would bang into things. Once I started driving, my car would bang into things.
Okay.
So this exercise I had to do with my eyes closed, with sensory feedback, because I was trying to stimulate the part of the brain that regulates sensation and sensory feedback and movement. Saw the change with that. I can actually now play sports. I don't bang my body. I don't dent my car. And then I had a spatial problem. So for me, there were no maps in my head. I would get lost all the time. So I created, again, a very different exercise. And then I decided when I saw the results, I want to take this work out in the world and help other people that have similar problems or different problems. And now we have problems for 19 different cognitive functions, from auditory memory, the person that can't read social cues that is awkward, person that can't understand number. I worked with a pilot that couldn't hold the instructions from the air traffic controller.
That's a problem.
That's a problem, yes, but he now can. I work with a lot of adults in this idea, what I call a cognitive mismatch, or what we might call human error, where somebody's in a job where their cognitive profile doesn't quite match the demands of the work, so they make errors, right? Mm. So, I mean, our brain is profoundly complex, and it really mediates our relationship with our world.
To me, it seems that the lesson of this is incredibly valuable for other kids who are like you were. But it probably means that all of us who have what we consider to be these sort of incorrectable deficiencies or these incorrectable issues with our outlook on the world or the way we relate to it, that it can't, it's fixed and that's just how I am and it can't be overcome. Do you think that your work proves that assumption to be untrue?
It absolutely does. I mean, I've worked with people as young as 4 and as old as 81, and what we're seeing is there's neuroplasticity across the lifespan, and all of these areas can be changed or can be strengthened. So, I mean, we've had lawyers come in, we've had psychiatrists, you know, a whole range of professionals where nobody would think they have a learning difficulty, but there's a piece. Like, I remember an anatomy professor at the University of Toronto who couldn't remember faces, and it always bothered her, right? Because she'd walk by people she should know, and they would think she was rude. Well, now she doesn't walk by them because she can recognize their faces because she's worked on that part of her brain. So, huge application. I think a lot of when we attribute behavior to personality and say that person's just being rude or they're being obnoxious or, like me, rigid, it actually might be part of their brain that is leading them to behave in that way, and we can change that.
Is there any age limit on this?
81 is the oldest that I've worked with, but I think what's so optimistic and hopeful is our brain is plastic. So, yeah. You know, send me a 100-year-old.
Sure. There's still time. There's still time. The book is called The Woman Who Changed Her Brain. Its author is my guest in the studio, Barbara Arrowsmith-Young. And you're here in Perth to do a couple of things. You'll be speaking tomorrow night at the Octagon Theatre at UWA at 7 o'clock. And you can register at ticketswa.com. So go to that website, ticketswa.com, if you'd like to hear Barbara speak tomorrow night at the University of Western Australia at the Octagon Theatre at 7 o'clock. You're here in Australia for quite a while. What are you doing while you're here? What are you hoping to tell people?
Well, I'm doing a number of presentations. Really, this idea that the brain is plastic. I mean, if we look at a lot of our current practices, they're still coming out of the pre-neuroplastic paradigm. I mean, most of the practices are the idea the learner's a black box that's fixed with a different cognitive profile, and we modify the external to meet that profile. We're saying, no, we can actually change that black box. We can change fundamentally the cognitive capacity and the learning capacity of the individual, that then that individual can go out and master whatever they want to master. So it's just a different way of looking at education. I mean, I want to put the brain in the equation of education.
Absolutely. I think it's massively inspiring. I think it's endlessly fascinating. If you'd like to hear more, Barbara will be speaking at the Octagon tomorrow night. Ticketswa.com if you'd like to know more. Or, of course, you can pick up a copy of the international bestseller, The Woman Who Changed Her Brain, at a good bookstore near you. Barbara Arrowsmith-Young, thank you so much for your time. Great to meet you.
Thank you.